The Detroit Auto Show is underway, and in the depths of winter, we're talking about what car makers have in store here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We got a look at the 2020 Ford Explorer. Volkswagen showed off its updated facade, but mainstay brands from previous shows were no-shows, including Mercedes, BMW, and Audi. Are you in the market for a new car this year? What's catching your eye? What features are important to you? Do shows like the Detroit Auto Show still carry the same excitement that they used to? Join in with your questions, your observations, 800-642-1234. Email them our way to ideas@wpr.org. Todd Lassa is the Detroit Bureau Chief for Automobile Magazine. Todd, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Good morning.
Well, so before we take a look at all of the cars on the floor, what can you give us a general sense of how the auto industry is doing here in the U.S.?
Well, the auto industry has come off a couple of record years, about 17.5 million sales per year, which is a very good number, as I'd say, a record. But when you look historically at the population of the U.S., not as high as it has been as a percentage, say, in the 70s or 80s or even a couple of years in the last decade. Very strong years and several in a row. So you've sold a lot of new cars in the last 4 or 5 years. It has peaked. It will have to. It will be coming down a bit from about 17.3 million this year. The record was 17.5 a couple of years ago, and 17.3 million in 2018. I think we're expecting about 16.8 or 16.9 this year. So when you look at something like General Motors' announcement late last year that it would be shutting down some factories and discontinuing some car lines, they are still over capacity in the U.S., and as is Ford to a certain extent, but very much GM. And so these car companies will have to cut down on production a bit.
Yeah, so we're seeing some leveling off in the marketplace. It's always interesting, too, how gas prices influence a bit the car buying trends and what these automakers are putting out.
Yes, they do. Certainly pickup trucks are very popular, and they have been for several years now. They're always automakers are kind of crowing about how models like the Ford F-150 or the Ram 1500 used to be called Dodge Ram. Now it's just Ram as the brand. Chevrolet, Silverado, and so on. They're selling them as luxury vehicles. A lot of them sell for prices in the mid-40s to mid-50s. So that's where I think the low fuel prices come into play. A lot of mainstream press talk about how the SUVs have picked up, and that combined cars and SUVs make up for something like 70% of or more of the industry. But when you talk about those sport utility vehicles, the ones we're buying now tend to be smaller car-based sport utility vehicles, whereas 12 or 14 years ago they would be truck-based SUVs. And so these smaller car-based SUVs are getting fuel mileage that, especially if you go with front-wheel drive instead of all-wheel drive, will get pretty close to the same fuel mileage as, say, a midsize sedan.
So what is going on with Ford and Volkswagen? We saw the Explorer on the show floor. Volkswagen has an updated Passat. Two very different car companies. How are they doing?
Oh, well, Ford has been languishing on the stock market lately, which is not good. And they've also been very dependent on their full-size pickup truck, which is something that sells well in North America, but not very well in Europe, where Ford still has a kind of a big presence. And I think that's why you're seeing this kind of connection between this alliance between Volkswagen and Ford Motor Company, which aren't as different as you might think, and I'll tell you one in a minute. But the beginning of this alliance will be to build commercial vehicles, pickup trucks and vans for each other, with Volkswagen using its extra capacity in Europe, for example, and Ford, in other parts of the world, Africa, South Africa, that is, South America and other parts of the world, Asia. And eventually, although they say they have no plans yet for Ford to build vehicles for VW in the United States or in North America, I think that will happen before long. So both have been hurting a bit. Both are similar in that the Ford family has about 40% of Ford stock, but they have a special Class B stock that gives them controlling interest. And Volkswagen in Germany has, as a major shareholder, the government of Lower Saxony. So, in a way, they're not all that different.
So, is Volkswagen over its emissions scandal? Has it moved on?
Boy, that's a great question. I think, actually, it's probably lingering in Europe more than it is in the United States these days. But in the United States, the problem is that its best sales year, Volkswagen of America, its best sales year stands at calendar year 1970. So after the diesel scandal, they pulled a lot of cars from inventory. They bought back diesels and so on. And they sell less than 400,000 cars a year in the United States. They've been kind of languishing in, as far as sales for several years. They've been catching up with sport utility vehicles. The new Volkswagen Atlas is designed to compete against the Ford Explorer, for example, which is the best seller in that segment, and as a three-row kind of family SUV. So Volkswagen's still playing catch-up. With this new updated Passat, it's looking to kind of grab some of the business that is being given up by car companies that are saying they're not going to build sedans anymore. But it's nothing like blockbuster sales with or without that scandal. I think they'd be more or less in the same spot.
Todd Lassa is with us. He's the Detroit bureau chief for Automobile Magazine. You have a line at 800-642-1234. Are you in the market for a new car this year? Truck, SUV? What's catching your eye from the Detroit Auto Show? What features do you see that are really appealing on new cars these days? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Todd, you're talking three-row vehicles. Kia is out there at the show with a Telluride model, which is a three-row vehicle. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that's a very it's a large three-row vehicle. Again, it's kind of a family SUV. It's got a little bit of a blockier design, say a little bit short, sharper edged or boxy, if you will, than some of the competition. And that does two things. First of all, kind of a boxier body will give you more interior space, so that third row maybe isn't so cramped for just your kids or your teenagers. And secondly, it gives it a little more of a trucky look, so it looks like a serious off-road SUV. They named it Telluride for a reason, to evoke the type of vehicle you would take to go skiing in Telluride, Colorado. This is also in a segment where Kia has been a little bit behind the competition and has not kind of kept up with the move toward SUVs. And as a result, last year, for example, Subaru outsold Kia in the United States, which was quite a move. Kia is doing some pretty good stuff. They've got some interesting cars and SUVs, and their catching up is going pretty well. This is a V6 powered sport utility vehicle. So again, it won't be a gas guzzler by any means, but being a three-row SUV, a few mileage, it will be kind of average.
So when you see a new model come out like the Telluride, I know back in the day I had the first year model of the Toyota Matrix. Should we as consumers hold back and let that first model year run its course, let all the kinks get out of their system, or should we just dive right in and try a brand new model?
Boy, that's the age-old question for buying automobiles, you know, and a lot of people like to get that first-year model because, you know, the first on the block, people who maybe care a little bit more about cars and SUVs and want to, you know, have the latest thing. I think they're way better than they were years ago, even a decade ago, and probably certainly 40 or 50 years ago. Pardon me. But you know, if you look at the, some of the quality indexes like J.D. Power and so on, yes, generally when you have a brand that introduces several new models in a given model year, its score goes down. But what they're scoring a lot of these days has a lot to do with, say, some of the latest infotainment systems. I hate the word infotainment, but that's what they call them. The thing in the center of your dash that plays the radio, the heater, air conditioner, probably gives you Wi-Fi these days, maybe Apple CarPlay or Android for auto.
Maybe caffeine for your system or something. I mean, I'm sure it can do all those things.
if only, you know, I mean, you can. There are some vehicles, I think, with heated cup holders, so at least you can put your coffee in that cup holder.
Well, you know, your publication, Automobile Magazine, takes a close look at the show's hits and misses. First of all, what's getting you excited?
You know, we're car guys, we're car people, and the first thing that got us excited, I think, was when, at the beginning of the show, that is the beginning of the press day, which was last week, Monday, one of the first big introductions was the new Toyota Supra, and Akio Toyota, who is the scion of the company that uses his family's name, came out to introduce it from Japan. They brought some journalists in from Japan as well as Europe. They brought in Fernando Alonso, a Formula One champion, who has driven Toyotas in the 24 hours of Le Mans, and introduced this car. And this is, you know, a tight, small sports car. It has a lot of BMW running gear, including a BMW engine and BMW, basically the basic platform. But it is, to me, still far more exciting than any SUV you could possibly wheel out.
We're talking about the Detroit Auto Show with Todd Lassa. He is the Detroit Bureau Chief for Automobile Magazine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What auto trends do you see coming down the pike that pique your interest? Let's talk about it. We'll get back to the conversation in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Detroit Auto Show has been around in some way, shape, or form since 1907. There was a break during World War II, but this year marks the 30th anniversary of the show's international focus, and it's the last year for the January show as it moves to a June date. We're talking cars, and you have a line at 800-642-1234. Have you been to the Detroit Auto Show? What do you love about car shows? Are they helpful in thinking about where cars are going in the future and what features you might be interested in? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Todd Lassa is our guide. He is the Detroit Bureau Chief for Automobile Magazine. Todd, you must just love January, but now you're going to have to really love June, because I understand this show is moving to summer.
It is moving to summer, the beginning of June, and this has been kind of a long time coming. This show has bumped up against the CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, as it used to be known, in Las Vegas, just a week or so before the press days of the auto show. And a lot of automakers are concentrating on CES. Mercedes, which did not appear at the Detroit Auto Show this year for the first time in a long, long time, instead introduced a car, the new CLA class, at CES in Las Vegas. I don't think they got any better of a bump of media attention outside of automotive media at CES than they would have gotten at the North American International Auto Show. That said, I think the summertime period is going to be a little bit tougher to get some new and concept cars into the Detroit show.
Let's go to Ann now, joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Well, you've talked a lot about trucks and SUVs, but I'm just wondering what the status of the minivans are, because those are so popular.
In minivan in our fam. What do we know, Todd?
Well, the minivans are kind of stagnant. I think Chrysler has revived that segment a bit with the latest Pacifica, which has been out a couple of years. In fact, we just had an announcement that I think it was yesterday that Waymo is going to be constructing a factory here in the southeast Michigan area to build self-driving cars. And, of course, they're working with, they're testing Chrysler Pacificas that are level 4, level 5 autonomy in Arizona right now. And so that, I guess that's the future, is that, you know, maybe a minivan that will drive itself. That segment, though, has been kind of, you know, a few brands, Toyota, Honda, Chrysler, have done fairly well, but not the other brands. The sport utilities are kind of overwhelming it.
Yeah, Volkswagen washed its hands completely of the minivan.
And the last one they did was a joint venture with Chrysler, so that just didn't work very well for them. But sport utilities is where it's at. I should mention, though, one of the car of interest is the Nissan IMS concept shown at the Detroit show, and one of the few concepts still that appeared at this particular show. A few years ago, you have many more concepts here, and I think that may be making a difference. But anyway, the car looks like it could be a next-generation Nissan Maxima, but it's a little bit taller. It's about the same size as a Nissan Maxima, except it's what we call crossover utility vehicle height, about 59 inches tall instead of, say, 53, 54 inches, or I'm sorry, 55, 56 inches. And the idea is that you step directly into the car, rather step down into it or step up into it. And, you know, it'd probably make a great Uber car. It's designed to be all electric with a 380 miles range and full autonomy, or you can drive it yourself if you want.
Well,
that's just a concept.
Yeah, that's a concept. Let's look at alternative fuel vehicles, more specifically electric cars. What kind of commitment are we seeing from automakers when it comes to electric vehicles?
You're actually seeing a pretty big commitment, considering that the Trump administration has said it's going to be pulling back on the 54.5 MPG CAFE standard by 2025, which obviously, if you sell a certain number of electric cars, will take care of part of that. The current market in the U.S. is something like 1.5% of the market consists of electric cars, and that would be mostly Tesla, the Chevrolet Bolt, the Nissan Leaf, and not much more. And so GM has plans for, I think it's 20 or 23 electric vehicles in the next 3 or 4 years. Ford has a smaller but similar commitment, and Volkswagen, for example, which may be the next step in the relationship between Ford and VW to bring more electric vehicles to market, including one that will be kind of that retro VW van from the 1960s, the microbus.
Wow!
Kind of replacing the Beetle in the VW lineup, but in this case, it will be fully electric.
That perks some ears up. Let's go to Tom now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Tom.
Hi, yes. Three cheers for the minivan. I have two Dodge Caravans. One I got 258,000 miles out of without a single breakdown, and I'm currently driving another one with 119,000 miles. It's fantastic. Anything about hybrid vans?
Thanks,
about
Tom.
Hybrid vans?
Yeah.
Well, again, there was nothing really new with minivans at this show. However, the Chrysler Pacifica plug-in hybrid is selling, and you know, if you're ready to trade in that 197,000 mile van for one of those, the price on it with you get one of those tax rebates can be not much more than buying a gasoline powered version of the van. So the plug-in hybrid, you plug it in, that means that you can run on pure electric for a certain number of miles. Obviously, being a bigger, heavier van rather than a small car, the mileage on pure electric is not as good. But and then when you run out of the electric charge, you still have the gasoline engine. So it's that kind of hybrid.
Yeah, Tom, thanks. Keep on trucking with those caravans. Let's go to Randy now in Ripon. Hi, Randy.
Hi, good morning. I just one thing that I find very frustrating with the whole electric vehicle. Don't get me wrong, I'm not against them. But nobody ever brings up this fact that in the northern climes require heat and defrosters. And everybody that has one, and when I ask them what happens when they turn the heat on, their range gets almost cut in half. and to generate heat from electricity is hugely inefficient.
Randy, let's because we're running short on time, I want to get Todd to really answer this. What about heat and defrosters and power?
Yes. Well, actually, my wife would tell you that that's a problem with electric cars, too, so she's not crazy about them from that point of view. But, yes, you when you talk about range, whether it's a Tesla or a Chevrolet Bolt or Nissan Leaf, that range, of course, is dependent on what other electrically driven accessories you use. And because you don't have a gasoline engine to get warm and you basically draw the heat from that engine in a conventional car, the electric vehicles don't get that warm to begin with. So, you know, I think that's something that they're trying to solve with electric heated seats and electric heated steering wheels and other devices. You can pre-warm your car before you unplug it from your driveway or your garage, and that will help. But the caller has a point that that you certainly lose range as a result.
Very quickly, before we have to let you go, how far away are we on driverless cars?
Oh, that's another million-dollar question right there, $1 billion, I guess it would be these days. I think we have a lot of the technology. We are very close. We have to do a lot more testing. There's been some resistance to it lately, in fact, in Arizona, where Waymo is testing those Chrysler Pacific minivans that are self-driving minivans. They've had some residents throw rocks at the vehicles recently. So I think we're going to see a level four within 5 years, where you'll have it'll be similar to Cadillac Super Cruise, where you'll be able to take your car on the freeway, a boring part of I-94 or I-80 across the country or whatever, hit a button, and the car will steer and stay in its lane for you and use the adaptive cruise control, which has been around for a while, to slow down and speed up as traffic cuts in front of you.
We'll be watching for it. Todd, thanks so much for joining us.
Kate, thanks for having me.
Todd Lassa is the Detroit Bureau Chief for Automobile Magazine. Just ahead, we'll take a look at what Governor Tony Evers discussed in his first State of the State address. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.